I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Back to the Mostly Professional podcast, where we talk about the space between beginner and master of craft and career. And today is my lovely guest, Kobe Lewis. Kobe,
hello.
Thank you for being on the show.
Hello.
Now, Kobe is, I've got more adjectives here than I usually say. Kobe is a psychologist, a model, an actress, a creative storyteller, and a soon-to-be mother. If you don't think that's a job, ask your parents. Now, Kobe, we met in a very, very silly way. We met.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
So we were auditioning for a short film.
I don't remember specifically what. Yeah, it was that.
And so we just said hello for about 2 seconds, and then we had to make out. Did you lift me up and?
I think so. It was some.
Me around.
Okay. Yeah.
It's quite good. So, that was our introduction. Hi, and then make out. So life as an actor is difficult.
Talk about your boundaries first, but it was a bit of a hey, how you going? So Kobe's been pretty bold from the get go. Now, some of the things I grabbed to describe Kobe are actually from her Instagram. Now, Kobe's got a pretty respectable following on Instagram. You're about 22,000 at the moment, which is 22,000 more than I got, and she's doing well with it. And I'm curious about the words people use to describe and label themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've got on there is actor, storyteller, creative coach. And I'm curious, how did you arrive at those words, those descriptions?
Yeah. So it, I guess, to be I'm an artist. And so one way I express my art is through acting, and that's such a passion and a love. And then the other way is through being a storyteller. And I use the word storyteller because that's what I'm most passionate about. That's why I'm engaged in the acting work. And storyteller by way of I produce, direct, write for films, and then produce for theatre as well. So filmmaker didn't really capture it, whereas storyteller resonates with who I am and what I'm passionate about. Creative coach, that brings together my love of psychology and the wellness and healing profession together with my love of art. And so you just came up with the adjective of creative coach as a way to encapsulate this different thing that I do, which is to bring those two loves together. As a psychologist, I specialize in personality and relationships, which makes then relating that work to my artistry such a good fit, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to understand the inner workings and the underlying psychological mechanisms of a character in order to find that part of ourself to bring truth and to the story and to do that character justice. So yeah, I guess I do all those things.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I just think I'm a person who deeply cares about humanity.
Mm.
And I do that through my work as a psychologist, but then being an artist is a way to reach more people quicker for me. So that's my intention.
Yeah, awesome. And I'm definitely going to talk more about psychology and acting and the relationship between the two a little bit later on. Because I want to stay on the social media a little bit, because it actually ties in a little bit to your storytelling. Because you've done a lot of modeling and branding and things with brands, and a lot of those pieces of content, those advertisements and things, mm-hmm. are very little, tiny little stories.
Mm-hmm.
Either that they've created and you've been a part of, or you've co-created.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been curious about what you've learned through utilizing social media as a maker, or as being part of another maker's vision, you know, because it's kind of like a still frame of one scene in an entire movie, and that's the final product. Mm. Maybe some of the work you've done recently.
Yeah, I find social media tricky. You know, I think it's maybe like most people. I don't know. Like this, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with it. My goal is, I do like to connect with people who I genuinely like, and I want to help in any way I can to help them thrive and get the word out about them. Generally, if I'm doing a collaboration, it's with someone that I work with, and then it's just natural to want to kind of spread the word about this great company. Mm. One that I'm just about to start some work with is called Unoya, and it's run by this beautiful girl called Jackie, who creates essential oil blends, and so we're actually creating together a perfume blend in the name of Willow that's all about self-compassion. So I like to connect with people who I just like personally, and really believe in what they're doing and want to support. And that fits with my personality about being someone who's collaborative and passionate about working in community.
Mm.
The part that I don't like about it is I think it can paint pictures of people's lives that aren't real. And so I've tried with mine to make it balanced in being in presenting aspects of my life that are more light, and then just being really real, in the hope that someone might visually like something, and then if they read the paragraph, that in some way that may touch them in some way, so that they don't feel so alone. So I try to keep it balanced between just general chit chat and then more deeper.
Yeah.
So to bring the humanness to social media.
Because again, we'll talk about this in more detail later, but I guess especially as a psychologist and knowing the kind of effects, positive and negative of, I guess, that kind of rose colored glasses effect that social media can have. They're so beautiful and they're having such a fun life, and you know, people usually just showing the highlights or a scrubbed up version of just a normal thing.
And it's, I do see the negative effects of it, especially in practice. I've definitely experienced it myself. You know, I think it can be utilized as in a negative way to compare oneself. So I'm very selective in terms of what I buy into to follow. And I try and just follow things that I find nourishing and that align with my personal values.
Yeah, great. So I guess this is more of a... I guess this is similar to what you're talking about, the kind of the mindfulness of what you put out there and how you kind of shape the version of reality that you're experiencing.
Mm.
What goes through your mind when you make a post or make content or share something, both in terms of how you want it to impact people, but just some of the nitty gritty, because one of the things I've seen you do really well, which can be seen as both practically useful and very inclusive, is the way that you really like to be social at events, take mm-hmm. photos with lots of people. If you're in a photo with someone else, or if you're in their photo, and tagging people and bringing more people into the front, if that makes sense. And yeah. How do you approach wanting to include more people in the content, the stories, everything like that?
I think being community driven and being someone that is at my core passionate about people, like I just have a love of people in general and very friendly. I like to celebrate the people that I get to work with, or that I come into contact with, and I'm just so excited about what they're doing. I think social media can be used to buy into this me, myself, and I culture that exists, or you could also utilize it in a really positive way to bring light to, yes, what you're doing, but what are all the people that you surround yourself doing as well? So my goal with social media is to find positive ways that it can be useful, and to mindfully stay away from buying into some of the negatives of it.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Because, I've definitely seen, if you're on a set or if you've done a project, I guess it's simultaneously a way to credit people.
Yeah.
Here's this thing that I was a part of. Here are the people that I worked with.
Yeah.
But also, I guess, depending on your role in a certain thing, but especially if you're in front of the camera,
mm-hmm.
then you... And I guess this is where some people can be either too self-conscious or egotistical,
mm-hmm.
to go, I'm the person on the thing.
Mm.
I'm the most important factor in yeah. this. And I think what you do with... the way that you include other people in, it's not just me, 40 other people helped make exactly. this happen.
Yeah. And 40 amazing people.
Yeah.
And that none of this would exist without them. And I'm a part, just a small part, a cog in a wheel, that art doesn't get created by itself, that it's so collaborative. And that's what's so beautiful, because we all bring our different artistries and bring them together.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. Being aware that there's other people involved, and I actually learn a lot when I see the names of people and things, because
mm-hmm.
at least on our level where we work and the industries that we work yeah. in, there's a lot of crossover. Like maybe your makeup artist.
Mm.
For your short film, I'm like, oh, I know her.
Yeah.
Good on her. She's doing that.
Exactly.
And then you can talk to that person and be like, yeah. how's that thing I heard? It's almost yeah. a talking point.
Yeah.
In a way. So I think it's really beneficial for people that are involved in
yeah.
in anything creative to, one, know that they are important to a project,
mm-hmm.
whatever their role is, but they're also not the only part of it.
Definitely.
And I think actors can be a little bit more guilty of the I'm the most important thing, because they're egotistical, but it's because they're self-conscious. Like, all these people are looking at me. It's like, maybe they're just setting up the light.
Exactly.
Maybe they're just setting up the microphone.
And everyone's trying to tell their story with their gifting.
Mm.
So you mentioned a makeup artist, and fortunately, I've worked with many I love. One, her name's Elise, and we'll pop her details at the end. And she's incredible. And she, when I met her, she was starting out, and now she's work, because I recommend her to as many people as I possibly can.
Mm.
So now she's on sets all the time. And so we're all there trying to do the same thing, which is make it in our art.
Mm.
But if we can help another, then isn't that what this is all about?
Yeah.
We all just need a bit of a helping hand, and nothing happens in isolation. And I do think that's an important message, that art isn't created alone. And if that is your goal, then perhaps sticking to the stories or whatnot, that in making art, it just doesn't happen without the person behind our catering or lighting or sound or the gaffer. It is collaboration, and everyone is equally as valuable.
Yeah, and on the flip side of that, if they're let's say you're maybe a day player on a larger production, and you go out of your way to learn people's names and show respect show respect to people who have an equally important job to you, and it can be beneficial for you in the long run, because they might remember you, and they know that you're a good person to work with, and you're friendly, but you're not there seeking validation. It's just all positive, professional working, because that people are there to work, but they want to work in a good environment.
Yeah,
people don't want to be left out, and I think that's I think that's another aspect of that inclusion, you know, of
definitely
people playing their part
and being genuine. Like, the way I'll be on a set is the way that I am at my coffee shop, is the way that I am when, like, in, I don't change in all aspects of my life. I always have time for people.
Hmm.
And I don't think anyone is better or worse than another. Yeah.
Hmm. I am curious as to what came first for you, psychology, acting? How did one draw itself to you, or did one draw yourself to the other? Were they kind of related in their appeal to you?
It's an interesting question. So acting come first.
Mm.
So I wanted to be an actress from as young as I can remember. I direct. So I would often direct Alice in Wonderland over and over again in my family's living room, and recruit my little brother, dress him up as different characters, the full thing. And I would always be Alice, and it was my favourite film, and still is, because I guess I didn't realise it at the time what it was for me as a little kid, but as an adult realising, I was drawn into the escapism of art, and that how it could, I don't know if I like that word, but like someone who is...
as a sensitive person?
A sensitive person.
Yeah, well, things affect you more and have a deeper impact.
Yeah. Yes, I'm definitely that way inclined, and I think if, say, school was overwhelming or family was overwhelming, I think I found how art could easily take me away from a very, very early age. And then joined drama groups and, started off as a tree. very important role, that one. And started ballet really early, and it was an important part of my life. I was also quite shy and anxious for a long time, and I found that when I was acting or I was dancing, that somehow the nerves went away and I felt more able to express those parts of myself without fear. So it started early, and then life happens, and at 15, I really wanted to understand people and relationships, and there were things as a kid I didn't understand that were happening with the people that around me. So I started reading psychology books really early, so from 15, so I have this giant collection of psych books, and I'm still not stopping. You know, 20 years later, I am in love with reading about psych. So then started that journey, and I just knew at 15 that that's what I was meant to do. I wanted to, ultimately the truthful answer is I wanted to understand myself, and wanted to understand my family as well. So I went on an expedition to try and understand the people around me.
Yeah, I feel like that's every kid's first fling with psychology. They're like, my family's weird.
Yeah.
They may or may not go further with it later, but they're like, it's like my family's messed up. Let's look into some psychology. Who's Freud?
Yeah, I'm, it's not a stretch that I'm a psychologist. I think I was always peacekeeper, always trying to help and fix and nurture. And the fact that I'm a psychologist really is not a stretch or a surprise for me. It makes sense. And I was also always the person that people, I guess, came to at school. And then just had my own difficulties, like I said, with shyness or anxiety, eating issues, you know, at one point. So I definitely was on a path of self-discovery very early. I really found it difficult to understand how people who love you can also hurt you. And I think that's why it became a bit of a mission to understand that. Because it made no sense to me. And then, so what did I do? I did a bachelor and honours, a master's, and just handed in my thesis for my second master's. So I've been studying it for a while.
Yeah, how many years?
It's like over a decade.
So if you're ever worried about how much uni work you've got and you're not studying psychology, then just calm down.
Yeah. It's a lot, and I'm ready to launch from uni, but I wouldn't take it back because of the lessons that I've had in self-discovery for myself and the people that I've worked with. I wouldn't take one of those years back. And also, I know we'll talk about this in becoming a mum. I had a little client recently say to me, you're going to be such a good mum because you're going to be able to teach
exactly
your daughter about her emotions. And that he didn't realize, but that meant so much to me. Then acting, I was over in the States, in New York, and I was doing some training, self-compassion training, which I'm really passionate about. So I was over there doing that, and a friend of one of my best friends back home, she put me in touch with an actor over there called Cinqua Walls, who's a very established actor in the States. And we become friends, and he shared scripts and his passion for acting, and that was it. I realized how alike it was to psychology. I returned back to Australia, and that was it. That happened a few years ago. I contacted a good friend of mine, Candice, and she put me in touch with The Factory, which is an acting studio in West End. And that was it. I haven't stopped since. And the reason for that was because I found, as a psychologist, I'm often a mirror to how to people's lives. So I reflect back to them what they're saying, or the focus is on my client. So often I can finish a week and I really haven't focused a lot on how I'm going or how I'm feeling. So acting gives me a way of processing strong feelings that I might have in a really cathartic way.
Because I have heard from Jordan Peterson about psychology being all about listening.
Mm-hmm.
And acting listening is a huge part of that.
Mm.
And has that I think listening is a skill. I think a lot of people are bad at it, and to an extent, even this podcast for me is practice for me to listen, because I'm trying really hard to actually properly listen to you, because I'm thinking, is it going well? And I'm trying to take notes, but I know that I'll get a better experience out of it, and then you will, and anyone who listens to this, if they really listen to the other person, which, and then if you're in a scene and you're not listening to the other person, then you're lost.
Yeah.
So,
where as artists we are open to all our emotions, which is culturally what's counterintuitive, because we're taught that strength is to hide your emotions and everything's fine and it's weak to express them. So in acting, we have this safe world where we all feel like we have an opportunity to express them, to be heard, to listen to another's. And so I think with that emotional availability, that's where listening comes in, because you are available to hearing, truly hearing the other and being empathic in what they're sharing with you and having that really sink in. And and that's where that attunement and that connection happens, just in life, but definitely on the set with your acting partner. Because often you can meet for the first time and you have to create chemistry and you've just said hello. But if you truly attune to who this other person is, then you're able to establish connection.
Yeah. It sounds like that is maybe in broader terms, similar to what we talked about in part one, about being aware and respecting and celebrating the other people that are involved in a project, like the cast and crew. And if you're taking the focus away from yourself, either from your own ego or your self-consciousness, and you put it on other people, you focus on them, you listen to them, you see what they're doing, then I think it balances out the self-consciousness and ego of yourself. And then it allows you to be impacted, to be changed or affected, either as a person or as a performer. And I'm sure that there's been plenty of times that in your work as a psychologist, when you've listened to things that maybe are extremely difficult to listen to, or things of extreme beauty, and there's a surprise that happens in you of that you can't experience unless you're listening and getting out of your own head and putting your eyes and your ears on the other person. And it's quite difficult to do, and that's why I think it's a skill. So it's where I think you're having the positive of that always working on listening.
Yeah, definitely. I think also it comes back to being genuine. I love what I do. Like, I pinch myself that I get paid to do something I would do for free. I absolutely love it. It's a highly privileged position for people to let you into the most secret parts of themselves and their lives. And it's my responsibility to show up and and listen, because they are being so vulnerable.
Mm.
And then I just try and perspective take in terms of, well, you know, any times that I've been in therapy, big believer in therapy, that the therapists that have made the most difference in my life are the ones that just listened.
Mm.
Like, they truly listened, and I felt a genuine sense of interest and care in my story. And I try and do that for other people, because some people have never known someone genuine in their life. Some people have never known warmth.
Mm.
Some people have never felt empathy. And so I just take that really seriously. And then when we're on set and we're serving a character and we're playing the role of a character, those interconnections and relationships are so important, because we're trying to tell stories. And the reason why we're trying to tell stories for many of us is so that they can touch the people that are watching, so perhaps they can see themselves. And part of my intention with being an actress is so that then fosters greater compassion.
Mm.
So you can watch something and maybe you judge it. Like, I've definitely been cast in roles and I've judged the character off the bat, but something in me wants to play it. And generally that's when I've judged a character, because there is a part of myself that I haven't fully accepted.
Mm.
That's all it is. I'm judging that part that I haven't accepted. So choosing to step into that and fully embracing this story of another brings more compassion.
Yeah. Doing a little bit of shadow work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The ones I judge, they're the most interesting, because it does show me what is it about me that I haven't, that I'm shut off to. In my own personality and in my own light and shadow.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely what draws, and that's what draws a lot of people to darker stories and characters, even as audiences, of, you know, I could never be like that. It's like, you definitely could. You just think you couldn't, but you want to see what it's like to experience it. So you watch a story of it, and then the actor has to confront that in themselves of, could I kill someone? Could I betray someone? Could I throw it all away?
Yeah. And the truth is, we all could, because we're all as human as one another. Mm. Like you just said, oh, I could never. And I like how it has that kind of like flavor to it. Like, I could never do that.
Yeah.
I could never do that. Well, hang on. Had that those circumstances happened in your life?
Mm.
Yeah, perhaps that version of you could exist. If those circumstances have happened in my life, yeah, that version could exist.
Yeah.
We could be talking in a prison. We could...
yeah, it's that one bad day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that one decision that goes very extreme one way or another. Not to harp on Peterson again, but even he has talked about... in some of his classes about if you don't believe that you could have been a guard at Auschwitz, then you really have not looked at yourself.
Agree. Yeah.
And I won't go into more detail about that because I won't do it justice, but
yeah,
that there's a part of you and that might be the things you don't like about yourself, mm-hmm. or the things that you think are bad, but they might be useful in some mm-hmm. way, like saying no is not necessarily a nice thing to do,
mm-hmm.
and people think they're nice.
Yeah.
So how do you reconcile with that? You know, being a monster, but knowing how to put it on a leash.
Yeah. I think we trick ourselves as well. You know, say that, saying no. I don't want to say no because I don't want to seem unkind.
Mm.
But then, hang on. If your definition of kindness includes honesty, then if you're saying yes to something that's really a no for you, then is that kind? Like, is it kind to you? Is it kind to the other person? Mm. So I guess it just comes back to values and recognizing we're all as human as each other. We've all got light and shade. We've all got things that we're conscious of and things that we're unconscious of. And basically we're motivated by need.
Mm.
And generally, often, when our shadow comes out to play, it's because we've got a largely unmet need of some kind. So when I started acting, it was about 4 weeks into my journey of acting, and I played the role of, it was a David Williamson play called Siren, and I just fell in love with this character that I judged initially, and all that it come down to was she had such a high need for love and power because she had received so little love and felt so powerless in her life. And so therefore, there comes the compassion.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Because I have another question about, because I in no way claim to have anywhere near the amount of expertise and study that you have on psychology, but there's such an overlap of psychology and acting preparation, like the character, like thinking of the given circumstances,
yeah,
for example, and even because I've experienced this, and this is also to do because I'm like an INTJ analytical kind of person,
mm-hmm.
So it does play a large part into that for me. Yeah. But when you've created characters, analyzed characters for a while,
mm.
and then you think, what is the character of me?
Oh, yeah.
What are my given circumstances?
Uh-huh.
You know, what is my motivation in this? You might call it a scene. I guess it could be like, you know, like a first date or a job interview, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yep.
Or even an audition.
Even this. Yeah.
And when, if at all, are you most yourself?
Because
I know that right now I'm playing a version of me.
Yeah.
And I'm trying not to, but that trying not to is part of the version of playing me.
Yeah.
It's a weird kind of little layering thing. And that's been quite an interesting thing to... I don't even know if it's something to contend with. It's just something to consider.
Yeah.
Of, it's kind of easier to go to analyze a character because there's someone else.
Uh-huh.
But you're like, ah, oh, but...
Analyze self.
I'm a person too.
Yeah.
I'm a character to some degree. How did I end up like this? What a, you know, if someone was to play me, how would they? What information do they need to know?
That's a good thought.
Do elements of your psychological analysis, character analysis, ever come into your personal life of like, I'm feeling upset or whatever, and then you go, huh, but hang on, I didn't have lunch today.
Definitely.
Or it's because I've got a thing later on that I'm not looking forward to.
Yeah.
Does that ever come into play?
Yeah. Yep. And I was thinking back to, you know, you asked what came first, the acting or the psychology, and... And then you mentioned modelling, and I have been modelling since I was 17. I was recruited by an agency in Brisbane called Tamblyn's and didn't want to do it. Just had no interest in it. We didn't have a lot of money growing up, so it was a job. Also, like I said, I was super shy and super anxious, and so it was a way that... To be honest, I learned how to act.
Mm.
It was when I started learning about, oh, that's how you put on masks. That's how you start performing. That's how you start pretending to be something you're not to the world, to hide how you really are. Mm. And that took over for a long time in terms of, especially like being someone perfectionistic, of painting perfect pictures and then finding acting and then realizing acting is actually about not acting.
Mm.
And you have to unlearn
yeah.
everything that you learnt in society, and you take off all the masks and it's so liberating because it's really hard work putting on a mask. It's really hard work putting on that version of self that you think will be liked and accepted or approved of. And it's such a relief just to be yourself.
Yeah.
Does that mean you'll be liked by everyone? Hell no. But at least you'll be liked for who you are.
Yeah. And it's like putting a weight down. Because I've... and you might... You definitely will know more of this than me if I'm thinking of the right thing. But I heard of something recently. I think it was persona or personas. And it's more to do with... Like, for example, I actually have two day jobs at the moment. One's in retail and one's in one's in a restaurant. And to an extent, the person who comes into the shop doesn't care about my personal life, and to an extent, why should they? So you put on the persona of the shopkeeper or the checkout person or whatever. And it's funny, being a performer, I can kind of analyze that of... I have said my lines, you know, the how I use and all that, the same way because I've figured out the way that it works best for 600 people who are buying a thing so that person knows how to interact with me and I know how to interact with them.
Yeah.
Because if we met at a dinner party, it might be quite challenging to talk to them because you take away that simplified version of a person that is shopkeeper. It turns into fully fledged human being with all your flaws and quirks and everything. Am I even talking about something real? And two, have you come across that in your own life, like even maybe the persona of the psychologist?
Definitely. I think probably the biggest one for me is the persona of the student.
Okay.
So, I perhaps like many teens, I don't think I'm talking alone, like I struggled with my esteem and identity, and my escape was, I acted out for a bit, and then when I come back to my studies, my escape was education. And so my identity really got fused with being this high achieving student. And if I received a 7 for something, then that was my validation because my identity was wrapped around with being smart.
Yeah.
But then there became a point where I was burnt out as a student.
Yeah.
It wasn't paying off. The drug didn't work anymore, and I was just left to ask, shit, who am I? At my core. Because I know you mentioned, some of the adjectives that I'll utilize to brand the work I do. But at the end of the day, my identity isn't that of a psychologist or an actor or a storyteller. My identity is my values and who I am. I think that was a lesson I had to learn, that I think I was searching for so long for something external to define who I was, or I'm a psychologist, that's my identity, that feels good,
the what do you do, and therefore what do you do.
And that's a part of self. That's like something I'm interested in, but it's not who I am at my core and my values.
Yeah, because you might feel better or more proud of saying, I'm an actor, I'm a creative coach, I'm a psychologist. You might feel better about that. Like when people ask me that, I say I'm an actor before I say I'm an actor.
Yeah.
And I work in a shop and a restaurant.
Yep.
Because I know they mean what do you do for money?
Yeah.
And that whole thing.
We're getting paid.
What do you mean? Why do people give you money? It's like, well, I can sell stuff. Okay. And therefore, that is what I am. But it doesn't mean.
No.
Is your identity somehow different because you've changed a job? Like maybe. Yeah. because maybe it means something to you, but maybe it's just the means to an end.
And I think something you said just before, like something that we can do in society, is the first question when you meet someone is, what do you do?
Mm.
You know, what do you do? Because our brains somehow need to compartmentalize.
Have you heard of the minimalists?
Yes.
Yeah, and they're
incredible.
Their take on the what do you do question.
Yeah.
So can you tell people what they ask instead?
I don't know.
Do you remember?
Yeah. No.
So instead, they get asked. So if for people that don't know, there's a duo called The Minimalists. They have an excellent podcast and several books and a documentary. They used to be poor growing up and then worked in the corporate world, and then they left that behind to pursue meaningful work and become minimalist.
Yeah.
And spread that message. It's a very simplified version of what they are and what they do. They have an issue with the what do you do question, because it means to them it feels like, how do I then compare you on the socioeconomic scale?
Yep.
Do you make more money than me? Are you in a higher status position? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they like to flip it to, what are you passionate about?
Yeah.
And it feels a bit wanky, honestly, sometimes to say it out loud. But, you know, it you get to that anyway. You ask people, what are your hobbies?
Yeah,
what do you do for
fun?
It's just a different version of the same question.
Exactly.
Because you know that not everyone that works as a checkout person, someone out there is passionate about putting things through at the register, and good on them.
Yeah.
But most people aren't.
Yeah.
And therefore, is being a checkout person who they are. It's like, no, it's a means to an end. They got bills to pay.
Yeah.
And we can definitely confuse that with other things. Working in a corporate thing, even being a performer, you know, there's plenty of people that go into this for the wrong reasons.
Agree. And I would extend that, like, the what are you passionate about to perhaps what's meaningful to you? What matters? Because where people invest all their energy or their time, what's meaningful to you can really tell you a lot about who a person is.
Mm.
You know, first and foremost to me is relationships. Relationships are what's the point of all this, of art, of life, if we aren't capable of forming true connections to self and others. So I like to ask what brings meaning to people's life. It could be, you know, a coffee with a friend or creating art that didn't exist before. Just what gives their life true meaning? And often, you know, it's got very little to do with anything external. It's just got to do with your values. And I think that's the key to happiness, if you're living according to your truth and your values.
I did want to talk about something that she has made very clear that she's passionate about, and that is self-compassion.
Yeah.
And I'm... For people, what is self-compassion to you, either a definition or an example or something?
Yeah. I resonate with Kristen Neff's definition, which is being kind to oneself and treating yourself like you would a good friend. Often I find that people who are innately kind to other people can often be the most sacrificial to their self. So it's finding a way that we treat ourselves with respect, and the more compassion we can have for ourselves, it's compassion in, it's compassion out, the more compassion we can have for others. You know, generally, if you come across someone who's quite judgmental of other people, who seems to always be putting themselves down or other people around, it's a compassion difficulty. Because no one who has true self-esteem needs to put anyone down in order to bolster themselves up. And so I feel like Kristen Neff's definition resonates with me, because she talks about compassion being a three-step process of mindfulness. So being aware of your thoughts and feelings in any given moment, It's about common humanity. So just recognizing that we're all the same. We all have the same humanness. No one's not important and no one's God. We're just as important as each other. And kindness. So treating oneself like you would a friend. So if a friend's had a bad day, I would be there with openness to hear what's going on for them. I would bring them something I know that they like.
Mm.
And so with self-compassion, it's doing the same to yourself. So before this interview, I needed some, so I got a coffee. And it's a constant checking in of, well, what's my need and how can I meet that need?
Mm. Yeah, very, very important of that. Again, the balancing act. There's definitely those that think too highly of themselves and those that think far too lowly.
Yeah.
And finding that that middle ground that's beneficial, most beneficial to you, but other people as well. And yeah, I've seen that a lot. There's lots of people that will put other people down. It's an example of a bully, you know, put other people down because they don't feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
Then on the flip side of that, there's people that will do anything and everything for other people because they don't feel good enough.
And that's the flip side of the same coin of being perhaps self-subjugating to your own needs and self-deprecating. People are above me. I'm nothing. Or going the extreme of I'm godlike and no one could be as good as me.
Mm.
And both of those are unhealthy extremes, and to be honest, are both built on the same foundation, which is insecurity.
Yeah.
And it's not healthy.
In comparison. Yeah.
Mm.
In an unhealthy way.
Yeah. Because when it would never be, how would that ever be healthy? Like if you're engaging in comparison I'm never going to be as smart as them, or I'm never going to look like that, or that'll never happen for me, then that's not fair.
Because
it's just an attack on self. But then the other flip side, if you're like looking down and like, no, I'm way better than them, I like my, you know, my life's so much better in all these ways, then how is that healthy?
Mm.
It's just neither extreme is, and it's just coming to a place of that common humanity that no one's not important. And no one's God. We're humans.
How has the rise in the self-care, I don't know if it's a movement, but I guess the self-care that people are performing, because I've seen it in various ways where maybe it's someone who quite honestly needs a break, finally takes one. Some people having an extra piece of chocolate, maybe because they just want it.
Mm. Is it chocolate?
Like, yeah, maybe. The increase in at least awareness of self-care in a positive way, like people are more open to it or take it more seriously, like even things like taking a mental health day.
Mm-hmm.
How have you found that with, I guess, you've already kind of been doing that to an extent, either with yourself or trying to help other people do it for themselves. How have you found that?
I guess as a psych, my view is, and it doesn't mean it's right or wrong, it's just my view is that the seed of mental illness does come back to people not having the skills to manage their strong emotions. And so then if there is a lack of nourishing self-care, then people are just trying to cope the best they can so they could reach for the bottle or reach for drug or anything that's addictive, like someone who jumps from relationship to relationship, like it's all trying to fill inner wound.
Mm.
And basically what it comes down to is a skill deficit, which is learning about appropriate self-care so that you can meet those underlying human needs, or you can soothe that wound that's being triggered in a healthy, nourishing way, not through some external mean to numb the pain.
Yeah, because I've seen, and it's hard to know the full extent of it, but there are some friends of mine who I think are probably closer to the putting themselves down, putting other people up kind of temperament, who do go, that do agree to the idea of self-care, but for them, sometimes it's maybe they could have just slowed down a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Because I worry that for some, I think that it's good overall. I think that there are, obviously, care for yourself is not always like a nice, soft thing. You know, tough love is also, self-care can be tough love.
Agree.
You know, and I think the only, maybe not negative, but the only thing I see sometimes is the two can get a little confused of maybe, you know, self-care doesn't mean tough love. Like, for example, I've struggled with my weight and my size over the years. I wouldn't call it an eating disorder because it wasn't diagnosed, but it was getting close in 2015, and tried to get as skinny as possible, and it looked really bad. And then the last 2 years, I've been really interested in physical training and trying to get healthy and strong and everything. And I know that there are times where you could call it self-care or whatever, have been slowing down. But a lot of the times it's taking a look in the mirror and being like, you need to work a little bit harder, buddy. And I hope that that can be included in the conversation about self-compassion of like, especially for me, like, instead of hating my body for how it looks, celebrating what it can do and then trying to make that better. Like, how awesome is it that I can run? How awesome is it that I can go rock climbing or something like that? I have all my hands and my limbs and they work, and I'm in healthy condition and I can rest and I've got clean food. And like, yeah, if I did that 3 hours a day every day, maybe I might need to slow down, but and that would be self-care. But sometimes you gotta go to the gym or eat your vegetables or something like that, and
sleep.
Yeah, you know, there's plenty of that hustle culture that I think can be good if it instills work ethic in people, as long as it doesn't lead to burnout.
Yeah.
Which is a likelihood, you know, especially with various things like social media pushing stuff like it's it depends on what you follow.
Yeah.
That nourishing thing. Like, for some people, it's nourishing to follow the calm down, have a cup of tea, have a bath.
Yeah.
And for some people, they need that kick up the butt kind of stuff, and it's good for them. So, yeah, it's a really interesting topic. So you've had self-compassion workshops.
Yeah.
What do those entail?
Are they
the same every time, or? No.
Yeah, that's a good question. No. I come with a loose plan to most workshops about what I'm going to do. But what I do is I find, when I get there, I try and find out as soon as possible who is in the room. Who are the individuals in the room? What have they come for? What is their... Yeah, what's driven them to respond to an ad about a workshop and show up? And that's how then I draw from that. And I suppose that's why it's artistry to me, because it's working with who those individuals are in the room and creating something to meet the needs of those 10 or those 100 of people who have entered that day. So I'll come with my agenda, but I'm flexible in that, depending on the needs of the group, then I'll be flexible in how I meet the needs of everyone there. And so sometimes I'll mix it up in terms of what theories I might draw from, or be very intentional about what I share about myself. If I'm sharing about myself just to for self-promotion or to be talking about myself, no. But in that context, if I'm sharing because I feel like that could then help in sending a message out about self-compassion, then it becomes an intentional sharing. I also draw from acting as well, and some of the beautiful techniques that we're exposed to in order to unlock closed emotional parts of ourselves. You really quite openly and honestly shared about a difficulty you have around self-compassion. And so often I'll start a workshop with having people look into a mirror and noticing and noting the thoughts and feelings that come into mind when they first look at themselves. And then once we've gone through the workshop and worked on them building practical skills for self-compassion and self-care, then I come back at the end and ask them to look at themselves again and notice what thoughts and feelings come to mind. And why that reminded me of you is often, because this idea also came from, I mentioned before, also having an eating disordered background. So looking in the mirror, having these instant awful thoughts on the external version of me, and then going on this journey of self-discovery and learning how to be self-compassionate, so that when I do look into the mirror now, it's more around who I am, not what's on the surface. And like you said, you're trying to make that flip of being appreciative for a body that has all its limbs, that's healthy, that you can climb a mountain, and that taking more of a focus than what's on the surface.
It's been really helpful. I have a problem with this to an extent, the phrase of like it could be worse, which is difficult, because it can be helpful and it can be unhelpful.
Yeah.
But I listened to a podcast that's done by a retired Navy SEAL. It's called the Jocko Podcast, and he talks a lot about war. Reads a lot of war books, and he has some veterans on every now and then. And to hear stories of guys that get blown up, and they get their legs blown off, or they lose a hand, or they go blind. And they still have a positive attitude in some way. They want to do things. They want to get back. They want to whatever. It's not a pity party. And you know, there's a time and place for, you know, checking in with yourself. But I think that's for me, that's been a method of, all right, well, I can still check in with how I'm feeling and what my problems are, but you know, some people have other problems, and maybe I'm appreciative that my problems are not theirs. And you know, again, it's the whole it could be worse thing. It could be worse. Well, I'm not them, but at the same time, I guess that's part of like the compassion and empathy. Thing of like, they had that happen and they dealt with it and they're still doing well. And like, that's, you know, that's inspiring, and it's motivational, and very reassuring almost as well of like, people, like, I'm a person, they're a person, and they went through that and they came out the other side and are not better for it, but oof, you can't keep them down. And that's awesome to hear, because you know, even with the work that we do, dealing with rejection, you know, every audition we have is is got the pretty high likelihood of you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
You know, and
how and you don't know why.
And you don't know. Yeah, you're not going to find out if you even find out that you didn't get it.
Yeah.
You find out if you get it, but you don't necessarily find out if you didn't get it.
No.
Until the show is like in rehearsals.
Yeah.
And you're not in it. Yeah. And then you go, oh my God.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have a kind of healthy sort of self-compassion for that, because I've been dealing with this a little bit this week. I had a date on Wednesday night, mm-hmm. with this girl, and I thought it went really well. And if I'm wrong, and when this comes out, it's that I was incorrect. But I haven't heard back from her since then, and I was beating myself up all day today at work.
Mm. Yeah.
Of what did I do wrong and what should I do and what shouldn't I do and all these things.
Mm-hmm. That we do.
That people do.
Yeah.
And, doing a few things that coincidentally that you've talked about tonight helped sort of soothe that discomfort a little bit. And, even talking to you tonight, distracting myself from something mm-hmm. like that I can't control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they all seem related, and I think that it's important.
And at the end, I was even going to suggest we could even... I've got a short 3-minute self-compassion break meditation.
Ooh, yay.
So that we could even do an audio recording and share it with you guys.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
So that when you do have... That's a human day. That's a tough day. Rejection is a part of life and it's painful. And I don't know anyone yet who loves the feeling of rejection, but it's part of life. That you can turn to this self-compassion break to soften, soothe, and allow those feelings that are there.
Mm.
We don't want to discount them. Advice like don't think about it or just don't worry about it. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So to provide something practical to listeners for when they're going through a hard time to just soothe that part of themselves.
Amazing. There are easily definable chapters in our lives, and for you, you've begun a new one, mm-hmm. as a mother-to-be.
Yeah.
I mean, for you, you might have started that at the day you found out you were pregnant.
Mm.
Maybe it'll be different when she's actually born, but that whole thing has
definitely
started.
Yeah.
So congratulations on Willow.
Thanks.
By the way. Everyone that's been listening, Kobe has a little one on the way. Her name is Willow, and she's going to have a great mum. And in what ways have you... prepared for a new chapter in life, either specifically or broadly, of thinking, well, my life is going to be different mm-hmm. now. It might be to do with the fact that you're going to have a child soon, or maybe it's just that people feel this way when they leave high school or university or they move countries. It's like things are different now.
Yeah.
How have you approached that? How have you felt about that?
Gosh, it's been huge. Willow was unplanned, and I am going to be a single mother, so it was a lot. It was a lot when I discovered 4 days after a breakup, so that was painful in itself. And then discovering I was pregnant. And then not having support in that was really difficult. But I'm thankful for beautiful friends and family. And finding out that I was pregnant really forced me to question if who I say I am matches up with who I actually am. You know, if the core of who I am is relationship, is love, is to do no harm. That's to do no conscious harm anyway. So deciding to choose Willow really resonated with who I am. And I invest so much in my relationships with others. I think I am ready to invest in the relationship with my daughter. I just had no idea. I think I'm still in shock, 29 weeks later. On some days it's overwhelming. Some days it's very overwhelming. I am super excited to meet her and find out what her little personality is like. And I'm equally terrified of her. And when I have conversations with her, that's what I share. Like, I love you already. When you hear a heartbeat, it's hard to not be connected instantly. And but I choose her. And it's my whole life as I knew it does feel like it's has ended, and this new chapter and this new life is about to begin with her and I. So it's terrifying, and I really have this newfound, I'm compassionate to a core, but this newfound compassionate for people, men and women in this situation, because you are faced with, in the case of unplanned pregnancy, you are faced with three hard doors. And I just have so much compassion for people in that situation, that your life is forever changed no matter what door you choose, and there's no right or wrong. And it really, I took my time in making a decision that was right for me in my life, in moving forward, which is very different from being an actress in LA. but I don't know, I think she's here for a reason, and so much goodness has come out of knowing of her existence. So I have turned my life around for better, to be her mom already.
You can be a Picasso and study her when she's learning how to do everything. Children are the best little actors because they got no self-consciousness.
I just want to nurture whoever she is, not put anything on her, like, just to provide a space so that she can find out who her unique little personality is. And that she is, it's our life. She's definitely part of my life already. And that love, which I can't really describe, is already there, and she's not even in the world yet. So, yeah. And from friends also, she's very loved already. And has her first acting gig coming up.
She's gonna be a little star.
She's, So it's definitely, it's been one of the hardest times of my life, but I have grown so much, and I've really been able to see who I am, and really that's been the most pivotal thing, is seeing if who I say I am matches up with who I actually am, my actions.
That's awesome, yeah. So, speaking of Willow's first little role, what have you got besides a wonderful little daughter? What other things have you got in the pipeline? Seems almost odd to compare them. What are you doing soon? I'm doing a film and I'm having a child.
Yes.
Have you got anything coming out soon? Well, technically.
Yeah. That scares me. In 10 weeks, coming soon, Willow.
Coming soon,
to,
Willow.
Yes. To
a
hospital near me.
To a pram near you.
Yeah. it doesn't, I just, yeah, for me, it doesn't get bigger than that. I didn't even think I would be a mum. I'm 35, ongoing eating disorder, like just, it just, I had made peace that it probably wasn't in my plan and that was okay. I've always been quite busy and driven and occupied, and then life just had other plans. And when you are a planner, that's tough, because I didn't plan it. And something I missed in responding to you was there's been a grief in that, yeah, that I'm still going through, and that I journal and speak about, and because it truly is an ending of a chapter to start one that I have no idea what it's going to look like. And so really allowing myself with self-compassion to have my sad days, my happy days, my scared, in fear days, it's all okay, because it's reasonable that I would be feeling a whole gamut of things. Chuck some hormones on it as well. In being an artist, that is one of the main ways that I do express my emotion in a healthy way for me. So some of the projects I've got coming up is next weekend I'll be filming two music videos with Crackerjack Productions, where it's I'm playing the role of someone who's just come out of a toxic relationship, and one of the songs is called Black Rose. And so it's about how, like, if we think of a rose, often it's given, like, we think of a red rose and it's given as a sign of love. But this is called Black Rose. And the idea behind this is that it, sometimes when we enter in relationships that aren't healthy, it's, if we go back in hindsight, there was something that signified that it was not healthy from the start. So that's why we are bringing in the imagery of the black rose, because it was toxic from the start. But as humans, we can be blinded, and often we can see what we want to see and miss those signs of toxicity that we may see in for someone else, but sometimes can't see for ourselves. So I am excited to work on that project, because I have compassion for the writer and what this means to them, and as a human can resonate with some of those themes. And the next project is I'm producing a play. It's Sam Shepard's Fall for Love. I think everything I do has a relationship theme. So that's about codependency in relationships.
We did that in our first year at uni. We all had to do a scene from that
did you
play.
Like it?
So I'm familiar with the play, yeah.
Oh, it's...
And I'll make sure I add in the notes about when that may or may not be on, which is partially dependent on the little one.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be the first play that she sees Mum in. That's with a beautiful cast. So Helen Howard is this extraordinary woman and director and actress in her own right, and she's the director, and friends and actors that I look up to are the cast. So we have Colin Smith, who's playing the dad role, and Michael Deed, who plays my brother and love interest, and Zach Bolton is the other love interest. And I just think it's a remarkable story because it's so true of many relationships where there's an intensity between my character and the love relationship she has with her brother. And it goes back to the trauma that they had as kids.
Mm.
And them growing up with this idea that pain equals love.
Mm.
And I think that definition is so true still to this day of... Often people can get wrapped up in intensity or pain equals love, but pure love is never that. So yeah, it's a story that I'm excited to be a part of. It is a roller coaster. It's super intense, goes for 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's a hell of a play.
And then the other project is with Sparrowland Productions, who I've worked with before, who I really adore and respect. And that's Willow's debut. So they were writing it prior to my finding out I was pregnant, then found out I was pregnant. So the script was changed to incorporate Willow. So we won't start filming until after she's here. And so that's a young career.
Mm.
In acting.
Yeah, not even a child actor.
No, minus one. So, yeah, I hope she doesn't mind. And that'll be...
Just got to pay the penalty rates and all that.
Definitely.
Give us some...
extra milk.
Extra milk. Get catering and bring some extra milk.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. So I'll make sure that I include all of your social media and your website and everything that we've talked about in the description and anywhere I can put links. So Kobe is on Instagram at kobi.louis, kobi.louis, and at Kobe Allison Psychology, KobiEAllison Psychology. She does have a Facebook page, a Vimeo, and a website, kobilouis.com. And everything that she is working on, I will include any links I can get my hands on, including the people we've talked about, like The Factory, Kristen Neff, and Eloise, your makeup artist.
Yep.
And is there any final words or anything you'd like to say to the listeners out there?
Oh, I think this is not just for actors, or this is not just for people who are interested in self-discovery. This is for people. So I would just encourage everyone to try and find what it is that brings them peace, or find an avenue of expression that makes sense for them, that's nourishing. And that's it. So we're having a coffee and a chinwag, and Matt was asking me about advice for other people around social media, and I said I honestly would just bring it down to one thing, which is to be yourself. You know, if no one has what you have, like, we are all uniquely different, and we all bring our own strengths, weaknesses, talents, gifts. I would just focus on not trying to emulate someone else's life or portray your life to be something that it isn't. I would just be yourself. And I was saying that in terms of the people that I consciously follow, they are people who I just genuinely like. I'm blown away by their tattoo artistry or architecture, or I must admit I follow too many poets because I love words. So those things and those people, those craftspeople, that's nourishing to me because I look at their feeds and I feel good. So then I consciously then don't connect with profiles that I don't resonate with on a values level and that don't nourish me. So any that invite that comparison or beating myself up for not being X, Y, and Z, that's just not helpful or good for me. I love following people who are genuine about their life and life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm yet to meet a perfect person. I'm definitely not a perfect person. I love meaningful conversation. I love depth. I love realness. And so if someone is bold enough and brave enough to put their heart out there, which is probably why I follow a lot of poets, that's the type of material that I want to surround myself with.
Yeah. It's a tool. Use it. Don't let it use you.
Yeah.
And
your branding is yourself.
Yeah.
Like, so if...
Yeah, the harder you try, the more of a try-hard you'll seem.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll push people away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a tricky new frontier. But, yeah, I think we'll figure it out. As long as you, realize most of the time it's just all in your head. It's a bit of a silly game. But,
And just choosing what you buy into and what you don't buy into and making those decisions based on your own personal values. Would be my advice.
Yeah. Put yourself first. Cool.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.